Pat makes a great point, and that just as politicians have to tread a fine line between pragmatism and vision, they also have to tread a fine line between their own convictions and representing their constituents. Of course, it depends, number one, on how firmly the position is a principled one, as opposed to one that is primarily responsive to changes in external circumstances. Secondly, it depends upon how strongly the public has made its voice heard. You know, the public doesn't directly make its voice heard. It has to be heard indirectly through polls, through demonstrations, through letter writing, telegrams, emailing. It's an imperfect process. And as we know, lobbyists do tend to manipulate that kind of process. But I do think politicians should be open to the voices of their constituency, should be open to changing circumstances, and should be open to genuine convictions, though it's very difficult to do in the context of a campaign, where, as I said, it's been taken over by sports and entertainment. But let me say something about the voter. In the end, the voter is a lot smarter than all of this. In the end, the yeah. voter is not swayed hither and yon by the clever ads and tricks of the campaign trail, as many of your listeners worry. The point of my book, The Keys to the White House, is that, in fact, the American people are pragmatic, rational, and smart, and they basically vote up or down on the performance of the party holding the White House based on the consequential matters for the country, the economy, foreign policy, social unrest, major policy change, scandal. And in the end, therefore, it is governing, not campaigning, that really counts with the American people. I think they often transcend the trivial coverage of the campaigns and the triviality of campaigns to get to the essence of what really matters for America.
David, as Alan Lichtman was talking about the politicians' calculations that go on here, I was thinking about the late Paul Wellstone, who represented Minnesota in the Senate, who flipped this around, this issue of sometimes I'm going to go against what my constituents want and vote the way I think I have to, and was able to make that a hallmark of his tenure and say to voters in ads, you may not like where I'm at, but you'll know that I did it because I really believe it. And on some issues, it worked for him that way.
Well, that's the difference between, I think, leadership and pandering. I think that we have a Republican small r democracy, not a direct democracy. We elect people to do what they think should be done in the country's best interest. We do not have a system where it's governing by a referendum. In some states, you have ballot initiative, sure, but this is not and has never been a direct democracy. And so I think that the Wellstone model is a good one. It's a more courageous one, and it's a more rare one. I mean, the concept of a politician actually using their office as a platform to lead, to educate people about issues, to take stands and build coalitions over many, many years. I mean, this is a very, very foreign concept, unfortunately, to this era of politics. But it is the concept, frankly, that has brought about the most change. Every major piece of legislation that we look back on in history started with a group of legislators, and actually before that started with groups of citizens
yeah.
pushing legislators to take a stand, and then over years and years and years...
David, aren't you a little contradicting yourself there? On the one hand, you say politicians should ignore their constituents and follow their own muse. On the other hand, you're saying it is small groups of constituents... Let me finish. It's small groups of constituents who actually move politicians and make them change.
But you're creating a false dichotomy. What you're saying is that the politician in leading has to ignore everybody. And what I'm saying is that the process...
No, I never said that.
Well, that's what you're saying by asking me the question you've just asked. There is no dichotomy between having a leader who says, I'm going to use my platform to educate the public and build a coalition around a principled set of issues. And you're not ignoring the public. I mean, let's remember, on all of these issues, the public, there's many different positions that the public has. You ask ask a poll question six different ways, you get six different answers. My point here is only that we are in an era of politics where pandering is the model. Leadership is not the model. And that's why we get so many flip-flops.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I do think there is a contradiction in what you're saying. On the one hand, you quite accurately point out that some of the most important and monumental pieces of legislation, including the most important piece of legislation since World War II, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, did not, in fact, begin with a few politicians holding to their convictions regardless of what their constituency had to say. Let me finish, which is the model you originally pointed out. It began just the opposite. It began with a small group of very, very dedicated citizens and constituents.
Yeah, I think he mentioned the citizen input there.
But if your politician, if your model is the politician, this is not a democracy, this is a representative system, and the politician has to stick with his or her own ideas regardless of the constituencies, you would never have gotten the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That is, politicians have to be responsive to some degree to demands of the citizenry. It's got to be
David,
a balancing act between your principles and what's bubbling up from the grassroots.
David,
it can't
go
just
ahead.
Go one way.
Well, I think the whole thing that you're throwing out is kind of absurd, and you're trying to create a dichotomy that doesn't exist. Citizens organize to push change and to push politicians to embrace that change. Oftentimes, all of the time, actually, those successful movements are met with politicians who do take principled stands. It's a mix. What you're doing is trying to polarize the debate. It's actually not even a debate. You're trying to polarize the debate in the same way that we've got a polarized political debate. These are all a mix of things. Citizens push the government.
Precisely, and that's what I said. It's a balancing act. It's a combination. It can't go one way or the other. You've got to both have principles.
And there's no contradiction. The citizens push for change. They push some politicians to embrace that change, and they are aided by other politicians who stand up for change in a more difficult situation. The idea that Lyndon Johnson woke up one day and decided he decided to be a nice guy, to pass the civil rights laws, to help Martin Luther King, as Hillary Clinton tried to assert, is so absurd and so fundamentally misunderstands how power works in this country. What happened was
is that the
political topography of the country changed. So a political calculator like Lyndon Johnson woke up one day and said, you know what? It's safer for me to be for civil rights than it is to me.
Alan Lichtman, I have a couple minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay. My point is that it's a balance, that you would never have gotten the Civil Rights Act of 1964 without the citizens' movement. It was the citizens' movement.
Who's saying any different?
You said, I thought, that we live in a representative system, not in a democracy. Politicians should stick to their principles and not respond to the demand of citizens.
I said we live in a representative democracy. I wasn't necessarily endorsing that. What I'm saying is that's.
I thought you were. I thought you. Well, if you're not, then we don't disagree. Then it is a.
You know,
balancing
I think
act.
I just realized that you two are not disagreeing.
I thought we were.
You think you are? I don't think you are.